Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Saturday Morning with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys, and I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter at Joy Keys. Also, check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. Also, guess what? You can email me. I'm at SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Love to hear from you, and thank you guys for emailing me and all the comments and support. Really appreciate it. Also, you can donate via PayPal, Saturdays with Joy Keys. And I want to let you know, if you miss a show or you come in the middle, you like didn't make the beginning, don't worry. Everything is archived. Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google, Amazon Music, as well as here at Blog Talk Radio. All the shows are archived, all 600 and something of them. So don't worry. You just look up my name and the guest, or my name and the subject matter, and something will come up if you look it up in Google. Well, this morning, wow, I got a little nervous. You made me nervous, you guys. He was like, oh, I'm really looking forward to this. He was tweeting about it. I was like, damn, I got to do my homework. Ah, this guy, he's a writer, an editor, teacher, poet. He lives in New Orleans. But guess what? He was born in Germany. He was raised in Botswana, Tunisia, Suriname, and the United States. Wow, right? All over. He devours pop culture and writes mostly jokes on Twitter. His Twitter hook is Magic K Negro, and he loves music, film, comics, and even some TV, he says. This is his first book that he has written, and it is called The Ballad of Perilous Grave. But he also is a poet, and I did read some of his poetry. Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit. Good morning, Alex Jennings.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for writing this beautiful, wow, it's a painting. It's an illustration. It's like a triptych that keeps going. It's amazing.
Oh, thank you so much.
So let's go to the beginning. You know, we always got to go to the beginning. And I understand that you were reading at the age of 4, thankfully, to your sister. What were you reading at the age of 4?
Well, I started off with X-Men comics, oddly enough, and my parents and grandmother would read to me every night. We went through the Narnia books, we went through Lord of the Rings, we went through all sorts of stuff. Roots?
Yeah, I read about the Narnia thing, and that brought back so many memories for me. Do you know I still have my Narnia books? I'm 52, okay? I just want to put that in there. I still have my Lord of the Ring books. Like, I could not throw them away. They are on my bookshelf right now from when I was younger. My dad also read to me when I was younger. How much did that impact you, them reading to you? If they didn't read to you, do you think you'd be the same person?
No, I don't think so. We had a rule in my house instituted by my grandmother that no one was allowed to speak to me in baby talk. They had to use full sentences and address me as a human being. And I think between that and being read to, it really helped form my early impressions of the world and what stories meant.
So what was your favorite? I did read that X-Men was one of the first ones, but do you have a favorite comic now as an adult? Do you continue to read them?
I do continue to read them, and honestly, like, what's been going on with the X-Men for the past couple of years has been amazing. They've got this whole thing where the X-Men have all banded together, even with their villains, to try and stop normal humans from murdering their people. And, you know, like, what with everything going on in our country today, that really resonates with me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember I was introduced to comics actually by a boyfriend because we used to go to this comic book store in Philadelphia, and Sandman became my favorite comic. And even as an adult, I have reread Sandman comics, and I'm still in love with them. It's just amazing. Now, you know, some people think, well, comics are just words. There's really no storyline. What do you have to say to those people?
Oh, there's a lot of great and rich stories in comics, like even in the superhero comics, but there's also a diversity of like genres and moods. One of my favorite comics of all time is Akira, the Japanese manga. A lot of people are familiar with, you know, the feature film that was made as an adaptation, but the comics themselves are like truly astonishing. Some of the best I've ever read.
Did you ever try to make your own comic, like draw or illustrate your own comic?
Well, I did when I was a kid. I'd say visual art isn't really where my talents lie, so I've done a better job writing comic scripts. They haven't been produced yet.
Now, what about this book here, this Ballad of Perilous Graves? The cover is beautiful. Who designed the cover for you?
Okay, her name, she's Von Brooklyn on Twitter. Her name is Lisa Marie Pompilio. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but she is truly amazing. Like, they asked me about some ideas for the cover, and, like, I gave them some impressions. And then when she came back with this, it involved none of the ideas that I'd mentioned, and it was also absolutely perfect. Like, I love this cover so much.
So what were your ideas?
I was thinking, like, something that looked kind of like a stained glass window, you know, like the ones in Catholic churches that have the Stations of the Cross. I was thinking something along those lines, but, you know, I didn't think of a piano that's also a gravestone. It's just perfect. And, like, they did this thing with the cover where if you look at it through Google, it's animated. And, like, when I saw that blew me away.
No way. If you look at it through – oh, okay, I'm going to have to do that. Yes, because it has, like, the skeleton and the gravestone and the piano. I thought the piano was perfect because once I started reading and you have all this music in there and the importance of song and culture in the book. So that made sense to me. And I just thought it was perfect for the storyline. So let's get into the storyline. And what is this book about? What do you want people to know about this book?
Well, at its heart, it's a blaxploitation Pippi Longstocking adventure set in a version of New Orleans where music is a form of magic. And nine songs of power have escaped from Dr. Professor's enchanted piano and manifested around the city as colorful street people. And so my title character, Perry, a failed magician, and his friends have to find the songs and return them before the city crumbles. But of course, that's complicated because one of the songs is Stagger Lee, the gangster's gangster of all time, and he doesn't want to go back to the piano.
Yeah, and, you know, I read that Stagger Lee was a real person, and you also have another real person in there, Yakumo. You want to tell us about those two people?
Yeah, okay, so Stagger Lee is such...
Wait, Alex, you dropped out a little bit. Can you still hear us? Maybe call back. I think your sound dropped out. Well, he does have another character. These are kind of like the scary guys, if you will, in the book. He's going to call back. Who remembers Pippi Longstocking? Oh, my God, Pippi Longstocking. As a girl, I loved Pippi Longstocking because she wasn't like the stereotypical, like, oh, I'm so pretty, I'm waiting for someone to save me. I thought she was a great character as a kid. Okay, this is him. Let's see. All right.
Hello, am I back?
Hey, Alex? Yep, you're back.
Hi,
okay,
yeah.
I can hear you. So tell us about these two characters, Yakumo and Stagger Lee.
Right. So Stagger Lee was a real person. His name was Lee Shelton, and he was kind of a gangster and low-level political operative in St. Louis around the turn of the century. And he got into an argument with his friend Billy Lyons and wound up shooting him over his Stetson hat. And at that point, he kind of entered into American myth. And so Stagger Lee's spirit informs everything from the sort of like outlaw image of gangster rappers to just like the memory and life of Black America. So I knew that I really wanted to include him in the book. And then, like me, Lafcadio O'Hearn moved down to New Orleans in, I think it was the 1850s, to write about the Cotton Expo here in New Orleans. And he lived here for 10 years writing about the people, the culture, and the food. And afterwards, he moved on to Japan, where he was sort of adopted into Japanese culture and given the name Koizumi Yakumo. And he finished his life there in Japan. And so, you know, I when I started the book, I wasn't intending to include Lafcadio O'Hearn, but I was writing a scene and he just kind of appeared, and I knew exactly what I wanted him to be.
You know, when I read that he had moved to Japan, it made me think about the African samurai, Yasuke. I had the guy on, he was a historian, and he wrote a whole book about the African, I believe he was a slave, but, you know, the guy went to argue a little bit, but I was like, you know, he's a Black person, yeah, he was working, but he was on retainer to this Jesuit missionary, Alessandro Valignano, and he went to Japan, and he ended up becoming a samurai. They were supposed to be a couple movies made about him. I don't know if you've heard about that before.
Oh, I have, actually. Afro Samurai, there was a series based on him, and then I know there's been at least one or two movies, like a live-action one and an animated one, I think.
Yeah, the animated, I remember the animated one. What's his name? Oh, God, I'm going blank right now. The actor who passed away from Black Panther, I thought he would have been a great actor to play his role. Do you have anybody?
Yeah.
Chadwick Boseman, yes. Oh, my God, I just went blank. Do you, is anybody approaching you about a TV show or movie? For your book?
There's been some contact, like nothing, no big news on that front yet, but there's something brewing.
Okay, well, I would love to see your book. I mean, because the book is so, like, on so many levels. It's not just like this flat, a lot of writers, you're writing a book, you have the scene, you got the door, you got the guys wearing the belt, you know, there's the desk and this and that. But you're like the clouds and the falling and the sensation, and it's just like everything, it just sucks you in with the descriptions are so animated, and I love that. Do you have a part you want to read today for the audience?
Sure. I have a section from, let's see, what chapter is this? This is chapter 4, and here is an incident that takes place in the summer of 2005 involving my secondary protagonist, Casey. I'll just get into it. Shea Lazar was situated inside a converted funeral home at the corner of St. Claude Avenue and Elysian Fields. Casey remembered finding the place after reading A Streetcar Named Desire and wondering if this was the very house Williams had described. Next door, Jean's Bakeries and the Po' Boy Shop were painted a bright Pepto-Bismol pink, but Lazar's front-facing building was a simple muddy gray with dirty white trim. Casey had just bought a pack of Newports from the Roberts across the street, and Mandisa, the home's executive director, didn't have any work for him right now, so he was just sitting outside sweating gently in his polo and jean shorts. Patricia, a golden-skinned mixed woman with thick, blunt fingers and blurry prison tattoos, sat gabbing with Marjane, a thin Lebanese girl with sharp eyebrows and delicate wrists. Casey loved listening to them gossip and squabble companionably. "What did you think, Kate? What did you think, though, Case?" Marjane asked. "What?" Casey said. "Of what?" "You read comics and shit, right?" "Yeah. So what about it? What do you think of that new Batman?" "I mean, it's the best one so far," Casey said, "but there's some shit that don't fit with who Batman is, you heard? He lets Ra's al Ghul die in the train. Batman wouldn't do that shit." "I mean," he said, "just because I won't kill you doesn't mean I have to save you," Marjane said. "Yeah, but allowing death through inaction goes against the core of his character," Casey said. "Bruce Wayne watched his parents die before his eyes, and he set out on a lifelong crusade to make sure nobody else goes out like that on his watch. Letting the demon's head perish, even in a wreck he caused, is antithetical to Batman's motherfucking motivation." "Well, damn," Patricia said. "I know, right?" Marjane said. She sounded proud, and Casey stretched like a plant in direct sunlight. "I told you, Casey knows all that shit." "Hey, goddammit!" The shout drew Casey's attention back to the street. A raw-boned black woman was charging against traffic. As she crossed the neutral ground into the uptown lanes, a rust-red Mazda 6 nearly clipped her, and the driver leaned on the horn as the car dopplered down the avenue. The woman wore what looked like a long red sleep shirt mottled with stains and old-school house slippers on her feet. Her braids had come unpinned from her skull, sticking out at odd angles. For an instant, Casey thought he heard more shouting, but if so, it was from far off. When he moved to New Orleans for college, Casey thought he might be overwhelmed by the place, the way it seemed separate from conventional reality. He felt none of that, though, not for all that first year. Now, as sophomore year approached, he would have these moments of deja vu, these little patches of bullet time where he felt himself drifting against the surface of a giant soap bubble. The woman's hand on Casey's wrist snapped him back into his body. "Please," she hissed through clenched teeth, "they gonna kill me." "Who?" "Hey," Marjane said, "get inside, now." She pulled at the woman's hips, gesturing with her chin toward the building's doubled front doors. The woman disappeared into the office, and now Casey did hear shouting. A heavy-set, bullet-headed black man and a short, thick woman were crossing Elysian Fields from the downtown side, just as the other woman had. "Y'all seen anybody running?" the woman called. The man gained the steps. "Crackhead-ass woman come this way?" he demanded. His voice was flat and hard. "Who y'all looking for?" Patricia asked. He turned to stare at Casey. "You seen her?" he asked. "You see anybody?" Adrenaline brightened his vision, but Casey noticed a bulge in the man's burgundy jean shorts. It might not be a pistol, but... "See who?" Casey asked. "What's up?" "Our cousin. Our cousin Marva having a psychotic break or something," the woman said as she climbed the steps. "We trying to find her, take her home. She come this way?" "I ain't see nobody," Patricia said. "She inside?" asked the man. "What y'all doing here?" "This is a place of business," Marjane said. "We work here." The man grunted, dubious, and went for the door. Nobody moved to stop him as he led his girlfriend inside. Casey, Marjane, and Patricia waited for a moment in silence. Casey didn't know whether to look at them or avert his eyes. He realized now that he was physically terrified in a way he hadn't been in years. He felt foolish in his surprise. Crazy niggas were bound to show up at a battered woman's shelter once in a while. The real surprise was that the woman on the run came from outside instead of within. Not for the first time, Casey wondered whether he should have gone with Jalen to get a job down at the beignet stand in City Park, serving pastries and coffees in a paper hat. Interning at Shea Lazar was more interesting, though, and to be honest, the fact that nobody expected him to be at work before 10 in the morning had heavily influenced his decision. The double doors opened again. Mandisa Russell stepped outside, followed by the man and woman. Mandisa was a round, muscular stud with the skin fade and neck tattoos from her days in the Holly Grove Projects. "I get it, though," she was saying. y'all concerned, believe me, we see her come through, we'll let y'all know. I got your cell number and everything. Didn't mean no disrespect, the woman said. Don't tell me, Mandisa said. Tell my folks out here. The man dipped his bullet head and frowned. We didn't mean nothing, he said in a chastened tone that made Casey wonder what Mandisa had said to him inside. We come on strong because we worried. You good, Casey said reflexively. The man held Casey's gaze for a moment, then seemed to find what he was looking for. He took the woman's elbow and led her back down to the front steps. Casey watched them go back the way they had come. Mandisa was the first to pull in a whooping breath. Well, yo, Patricia said and shook her head. Got her out the back before they made it inside, Mandisa said. I don't know what the fuck that was, but we need to beef up security. She made a point of finding Casey's gaze and holding it. You good? Yeah, Casey said. Yeah, I never seen nothing like that. I'm from the suburbs. Up there in Baltimore, right? Mandisa said. Catonsville, Maryland, Casey said. Yeah. If I give you the afternoon, you gonna come back tomorrow? Oh, no doubt, Casey said without thinking. Instead of scaring him away, the incident had proven to him that the work they did here truly mattered. On his way back to his LeBaron, Casey checked his razor to see 3 missed calls and a text from Jalen. Price is right. Casey sucked his teeth. That meant he should grab his graffiti gear and come on down. All right, I'll stop there. Uh-oh. Hello? Oh, no.
Can you still hear me?
I can hear you now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So if you had, I want to ask you some questions. If you had to go to Mars, what are 3 things you would take with you?
Oh, man, 3 things I would take with me. Well, all the water I possibly could. Does my spacesuit count? I would definitely want to take, sorry.
No, go ahead. And what else? You got one more thing. What's the third thing?
Well, hopefully I can combine my record player and my record collection because I need some tunes on Mars.
Okay, so you're going to try to combine it too. All right, another question. If you had a superpower, what would your superpower be?
Oh, my God, I've thought of this so often. And honestly, my usual answer has been flight, but I think now the power I would want is like super speed, like hardcore super speed, like the Flash in the comics.
Okay, all right. Now, what's your favorite food? New Orleans has a lot of good food down there. Do you have a favorite dish?
Honestly, I would say my favorite dish is probably oysters on the half shell. I just love them.
And what do you put on them?
Ones down here. I like to put on cocktail sauce, you know, a little bit of horseradish, some lemon, some Worcestershire sauce, all that stuff. Or mignonette, that vinegary sauce that like really brings out the flavor.
See, I'm not an oyster, but I talked to somebody else that was from New Orleans, and like they were talking about eating that during like Thanksgiving. And I was just like, wow, this is amazing how people have so many different dishes from different parts of the world. And, you know, you think yours is like tradition, but there's traditions, different traditions all over the place. And you have lived so many different places. Are there other dishes from the places that you live that you remember or that you like?
Oh, absolutely. In Tunisia, we had these sandwiches called tabounas. And they were made with this special bread baked in a clay oven. And, like, the stands were everywhere. And I would just go in, get a sandwich made. And they were, like, they're the thing that I miss the most from Tunis, I'd say.
Okay.
Because we've never brought that over here.
Wow. Well, I'm going to give away some copies of your book. So I want to encourage people to follow me on social media. And your social media hook is Magic K Negro. That's on Twitter, and that's also on Instagram, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And do you have another book already in the works? Because there could be a sequel. I mean, okay. Is it connected or is it completely different?
It's completely different, but I don't think I'm through writing in this world, like maybe not with these exact characters, because I think their story is mostly at an end, but the world is something I'll certainly be coming back to many times.
Oh, definitely. You got a lot. You have a lot of food for fodder, as they say. I think that's the phrase in that world, the upside down world, you know, or if you want to call it, I don't know. But I encourage you guys to check him out. Also, he writes poetry. I read about your Superman villain, extra-dimensional Superman villain character in one of your poems. So he's multi-talented. Yes, I couldn't pronounce it. I wasn't even going to try. So follow him to find out what's going on with his next book, if this book is going to become a movie, his other poetry, and, of course, his jokes. Alex Jennings, thank you so much for coming on this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. I've had a great time.
I'm glad. I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Okay.
All right, bye-bye. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Just got off the phone with author Alex Jennings. We were talking about his book, The Ballad of Perilous Graves. I'm going to give away a copy, as you know I usually do. Follow on Twitter at Joy Keys. Check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram. And guess what? I'm about to get on Instagram right now. We're going to talk about PTSD. So if you have time, you can jump on Instagram, and we're going to be doing a live show on Instagram.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager, Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.